It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I am Tony Vernetti from Feds, Federal Employee Defense Services. And today is Friday, February 6, 2015, and we have a great show for you today. We are delighted to have some representatives from one of the oldest, over 100 years old, and most respected and largest management organization representing federal government employees with us. And of course, I'm talking about the Federal Managers Association, or FMA. And this is our kind of our annual show that we do with FMA each year to talk about, you know, really what's going on with federal managers, what their concerns are, what the legislative goals and initiatives are for FMA this coming year. And of course, their upcoming National Convention and National Training Day, which is next month already. So here with me in studio from FMA are Todd Wells and Greg Stanford. Todd is the executive director of FMA, and Greg is the Director of Government Affairs. Good morning, guys, and thanks for taking some time to be with me today.
Good morning. Thanks for having us here.
And our other guest from FMA today is Dora Quinlan. Dora is the National Secretary of FMA, and she is joining us by phone from Jacksonville, Florida, because it's way too cold up here, she told us. or like I refer to Jacksonville as Buffalo by the Sea. Dora, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, everyone.
And then a little bit later, we'll have, we're pleased to have Dexter Brooks on from the EEOC. Dexter is one of their presenters for FMA's National Training Day. So we'll get a little preview of what he's going to have to say. And just a reminder that Fed Talk has a new sponsor this year. We are delighted to have Federal Long-Term Care Partners. Long-Term Care Partners administers OPM's sponsored Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program. For more information, go to www.ltcfeds.com. That's ltcfeds.com. So, Dora, the guys in the studio all voted for me to start with you today. So you see what happens when you're not in the room.
I see. That's fine.
Thank you, Dora.
So I know I want to give you an opportunity to talk just a little bit about your federal career, because I know I introduced you as the National Secretary for FMA, but I like to remind our listeners that you have a day job too, and you know the work you do for FMA is on your own time, you know, is volunteer time. But I always like to give the representatives from the organizations, you know, an opportunity to tell us a little bit about themselves and the kind of work you do for the federal government.
Absolutely. I have 37 years government service. I am located at the Fleet Readiness Center Southeast in Jacksonville, Florida, as you stated, and I am the Business Operations Director. Excited to say Fleet Readiness Center Southeast will be celebrating 75 years here in Jacksonville, Florida. It's our 75th anniversary, not quite as old as FMA, but we're really proud about that. So what I do, I'm responsible for coordinating the development and implementation of the command's long-range business strategy. So we perform in-depth maintenance, repair, and modification on assigned aircraft platforms. We also perform in-service engineering, logistics, and program management functions here. So that's just a little bit about what I do.
Sure, sure. And then, so guys, if you didn't hear that, right, that was, you know, 1970s, we were all still in grade school or middle school, when she was already serving the government.
And she looks younger than us.
Dora, tell us a little bit about FMA, the organization, how you got involved in it, and why somebody should consider joining.
Okay. Actually, I was introduced to FMA when I moved from Patuxent River, Maryland to Jacksonville. That was in 2001. And actually, someone just approached me about FMA. So our mission here, FMA, is to advocate excellence in public service through effective management. And FMA represents the interests and concerns of the federal manager. So I've been very excited to be a part of this organization. And what it really offered to me when I first joined FMA was great networking opportunities. And just the main mission that FMA is very passionate about being an advocate for excellence in public service. And as a federal manager, that's very important to me.
Right. And Todd, maybe I can have you just jump in here a little bit. I know FMA is responsible for representing the interests of over, 200,000 managers and supervisors and executives in the federal government. But I wonder if you can tell us a little bit more about the membership benefits that members get when they join FMA, what they should expect.
Sure. First and foremost, we're looking out for their interests. We're their advocates here in Washington, D.C., just like the chapters are out in the field, looking out for the interests of the chapter members. At the national level here, we have our headquarters, and we have Greg and his colleague Katie Maddox under Government Affairs Office, who are up on the Hill all the time working with Congress however we can. We're always trying to find friends. We're nonpartisan, and we do a very good job through whatever administration's in office at finding those friends and finding the people that we can work with. Things certainly don't always go our way, but the folks that understand FMA's been there for the past 100 years also understand that you got to have that constant communication to make sure that we're ready whenever someone does come along that's willing to talk to us. And Greg will get into some of those specifics later on, that we're there looking out for them. So that's the main thing. We also offer our members education, with the training we're going to talk about in a little bit at the convention, but we also are doing webinars with different partners, and we'll be doing more of those this coming year. And then we also have lots of information on our website as far as if you're looking for more information about some of the things that are going up on the Hill, you can come to our website at www.fedmanagers.org. That's Fed Managers with an S.
And how much does it cost to join? What are the dues?
It's $125 a year for a member at large. That's a direct relationship. It's a little cheaper through a chapter just because you're paying chapter dues as well.
And they can get all that information right on the website. And
yep.
Can they sign up there and join there?
We welcome everyone to go see our site.
If I could just sort of echo what you mentioned about the advocacy, the important advocacy that FMA is involved in. And if you're out there, thinking about, joining, some successes FMA has had over the years, the FERS sick leave credit, this is where you're able, as a FERS employee, you would lose your sick leave, you're retired. This way you can get credit for it.
Right, it can be up to
us lawyers thought that made a lot of sense because we were having people go out sick for a year just to try to get credit for it. I know you guys are heavily involved in the Hatch Act reform, phased retirement, the reemployed annuitants, legislation. And the reason I'm mentioning all that, because that doesn't get done unless you have the support of your members, and you need to have the collective voice. And the more members you get, the more you're going to be able to accomplish.
Absolutely.
The more you're going to be, really be able to get done. So the reason I'm saying all this is people think they can sit on the sidelines and get the benefit from all the advocacy that organizations such as FMA are involved in, and that's not the case. If you really care, about, your role in the federal government, your pay and benefits, you need to join an organization like FMA.
Absolutely, and thank you for saying that.
Absolutely. This is a good place to kind of stop and take our first break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here with Dora Quinlan, Todd Wells, and Greg Stanford, all from the Federal Managers Association. We'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Brunetti, and I'm talking with the good folks from the Federal Managers Association. And we'd like to start talking about their national convention, which is coming up next month. Dora, can you please tell us what you have in store for the convention this year?
Absolutely. This will be FMA's 77th National Convention and Management Training Seminar. We're excited to kick off the opening ceremonies on Monday. That'll be March 9th. And our keynote address will be Ms. Lisa Danzig, Associate Director for Performance and Personnel for the Office of Personnel and Management. On that first day, we'll hold the officer and board elections. We'll discuss and vote on resolutions. We'll also hear report outs from our national officers and staffs. And also during that first day, we'll hold regional and conference breakouts. So this will be an opportunity for members to talk specifically about their issues and concerns in different breakout groups. Then Tuesday, we'll have a keynote speaker, and Congressman Robert Whitman from Virginia will be joining us. We have a lot of FMA members who work at the Norfolk Naval Shipyard who live in his district, and Representative Whitman is very interested in FMA. He appreciates federal employees, FMA, Greg and Katie from the national office. They work with him on a continual basis, and as well as with his staff. So very excited to have Congressman Whitman join us. Also on Tuesday, we'll have an awards ceremony where we will be recognizing our Manager of the Year. It's a very prestigious award for a federal employee. Tuesday, I have to talk about our training day. We have an exciting lineup. Our theme will be Federal Managers, Building the Government of Tomorrow. So we have some really great topics, succession planning, ensuring quality hires. I have to mention the final presentation of the day will be by Mr. Dexter Brooks, who will be joining your show later, Equal Employment Opportunity and Effective Leadership. So we're excited for a training day that we have lined up. The most exciting part of the convention for me every year, as well as a lot of the FMA members, is on Wednesday, where members will be visiting with their members of Congress and their staff to discuss important FMA issues, not only issues that are important to FMA as a whole, but also they'll be able to visit with their congressional representatives to address specific issues within their districts. So we affectionately call Wednesday FMA's Day on the Hill, and that's a day when FMA will show up in full force to discuss our legislative issues that will affect the federal agencies and employees. And we wrap up our convention with a wonderful evening reception, and this is also an opportunity when the new officers and board members will officially take on their new positions and address the assembly. So very excited about the lineup we have.
No, it's always a great convention. And again, it's here in Arlington, Virginia. It's March 8th through the 12th. And if people haven't registered or signed up yet, they can do all that on the website, right?
Right. That's right. Please
do. And just a little plug I like to give for the conference, since I travel around the country going to a lot of different conferences, a lot of different organizations, and it's really a worthwhile conference because you get a little bit of everything. Day one, you're kind of doing the business of the organization. You're getting all that stuff out of the way. Day two, you're doing what I like to called now mission critical training, you know, that you're bringing in people, you know, that can, you know, talk to, you know, not as leaders of FMA, but more as leaders, you know, in the federal government at these various agencies. And then what I think is really special and unique to FMA is really your day on the Hill, you know, and that's a testament, you know, the work that you all do, you know, all year long, you know, with the representatives, you know, on Capitol Hill. You're able to, you know, you have the conference here, you know, year in, year out, and, you know, you really, you know, to get up there that day and, you know, and make your collective voices heard. And that's really, really important, you know. And then, you know, anytime you can get a U.S. congressman, you know, to show up, and a very important OMB representative is a testament to the credibility of the organization. So, you know, congratulations for you guys.
Thank you. You know, it's great for us, Day on the Hill, going back to our Wednesday up on the Hill. It's just good for us, you know, Monday and Tuesday, we have the chance to be seeing our members in action, talking to each other and just getting energy from each other, but also realizing that some of the concerns they have are across agencies. Some of the things we're asking them to take up to the Hill, you know, stand for all of federal managers. And then, of course, they get into specific agency issues as well. So it is a very important day for us, and it's also an educational time for us.
And how do you, I mean, I'm just curious how you go about, you know, planning that. Is it an all year, you know, thing where you're planning to get, you know, because you've got representatives from all over the country that you're meeting with, you're bringing in your people, you know, Greg or Todd, either one of you jump in.
Well, I'll let Greg answer that a little bit, but it's one of those things that, yes, of course, this only happens once a year in D.C. during our convention, but we do have folks coming to D.C. other times, and then we are often, you know, we're always asking to go have people go to their district offices and talk to their folks. So,
absolutely, and in terms of, you know, action that we ask our members, and that's, like you said, Tony, the kind of the lifeblood of what we do is, you know, Katie and I can go up to the Hill, and we do, and we converse with staff throughout the year, but what really makes the most difference is when the FMA members themselves reach out to their representatives, let them know that, hey, I'm a constituent, I'm a voter, and these issues are important to me.
Right. I'm a lawyer, we're the mouthpiece, right? We go up there, but it really means something of value when you bring constituent, you know, that here, you know, here's, you know, what I want you to consider, and here's why. You know, and it puts, you know, it puts some real, real meaning behind it. And that's why I think, you know, that day on the Hill, you know, is so so special for you guys.
Hey, Tony, if we have a second, I just wanted to add one other thing about the training day. That's Tuesday, March 10th. And whether you're a member or a non-member of FMA, you're welcome to attend. We'd love to have, you know, more the merrier. So please do come, even if you're not a member. And just to be clear, we've been working with OPM this year. Mika Cross, who was with OPM until just recently, and now Karen Kolakowski has been working with me. And we have a lot of these presenters are coming from OPM who are very senior presenters. And we're just very excited and thankful. And I just wanted to put that out there just because they've done a lot for us. I want to give them a little credit.
Now, do you have to be a member of FMA to attend the training day?
No, that's what... You know, the Monday, the internal business, you do need to be a member, but Tuesday's
did
open
you just
to
say
everyone.
That I wasn't listening.
I did, but you were you're busy. So, no, absolutely. We'd love to have anyone who's a supervisor, manager, executive in government is more than welcome. We would love to have them there.
Anything worth saying once is worth saying twice.
Absolutely.
Right?
I'll say that again.
You know, and we can go back because we were kind of remiss in the intro. Why don't you or Dora tell us a little bit about FMA's leadership? I know. Your president, Patricia Niehaus, is going to be with us for another year, two years.
Right. Okay. Dora, you want to handle that?
I'm going to let you handle that, Todd.
Well, you had talked about elections, and we have a unique situation this year where three of our four officers are actually going to be up for election. And, of course, Dora is our national secretary, but I'm happy to say that she'll be running for national vice president, and our president is the only one who is not running again. Her name is Patricia Niehaus. She's been in office 5 years now, and we have term limits that will end her time at six. But she is chief of personnel out at Travis Air Force Base near Sacramento, California. And we've done very well under her. It's going to be a big loss, but I'm happy to say we have great leaders coming up behind her, and glad to see the folks that we have coming up. So,
great. So going back to the National Training Day, we were fortunate to have one of your speakers call in for us this morning. So I'd like to get a little preview from him. Dexter Brooks from the EEOC's Office of Federal Operations. Dexter, good friend of mine. We go back a long ways. He's the director of Federal Sector Programs. Good morning, Dexter. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Hey, Tony. Good talking to you again.
Hey, why don't you give our listeners just a little preview. I always like for you to talk about not only the EEOC, but, the Office of Federal Operations and how there's a special office, that deals with federal sector EEO, areas. And then maybe when we come back from the break, I'll have you preview what you're going to be teaching during the course.
Okay, sure. And good morning to Todd, Greg, and Dora. It's good to have you guys with us. And thanks for the opportunity to present at your conference. Well, at EEOC, we're an independent federal agency and responsible for eliminating employment discrimination in all segments of our population. And one of the unique segments we have is the federal sector. And so the idea with the federal sector is that the federal sector should be this model employer that that does things proactively, that doesn't rely on litigation to address inequalities and opportunities. And our office really works with federal agencies and federal stakeholders such as FMA to see how can we be a better employer that actually focuses on the service that we're required to do as federal employees. And as a part of my office, we have a strategy that's not completely litigation, but it's also a partnership and awareness. And so as we try to educate the workforce, we also try to educate all portions of our workforce. And one of our key stakeholder groups are federal managers. And as we come back from the break, I'll give you a little synopsis of what I plan to share with federal managers, because they're crucial to our efforts in terms of EEO. They're one of our central partners. And in this mechanism, working with FMA, who's been a long supporter of equality and actually helping us effectuate a lot of things that we want to happen in the federal government are done through managers. I mean, EEOC, we're the big picture agency, but the day-to-day activities that's necessary to ensure equality of opportunity happen through federal managers. And so this opportunity, sometimes people don't naturally think of EEOC and management groups working together. Actually, if we want to be a model employer, this type of model of working EEOC, FMA, and such relationships are crucial to achieving what we all want the federal government to be.
Well, and the EEOC has, very important task and job of, having to educate, particularly your office, having to educate the rest of the federal government, on not only, what the laws are, what the best practices are, really, how to do it, the right way, what the gold standard is.
Yes. So, we spend in maybe a decade or so ago, we shifted a lot of resources in the federal sector from just, more compliance to more proactive. How do we gather a lot of information from the federal workforce about what's going on in terms of opportunity, but then leveraging that information into proactive guidance, training. So we have a very strong training program that offers courses. And one of the early things that we recognized a decade ago as we really launched our training institute is that we need to reach managers. Federal managers are a key stakeholder group that are very open to equality. Federal managers come into the government with public service on mind. So this is almost second nature to them, fairness and equality. So it's not like an adversarial group for us. So we do spend quite a bit of time. We train managers at all levels. We have a training just for civil rights managers so that the EEO managers, so they'll understand their role. So we do recognize the value of education and early education, in particular, the federal managers who sometimes are thrust into leadership positions. And the federal government is very nuanced, a lot of rules, a lot of regulations, and then a lot of people skills that lead to conflict that we think federal managers should be armed with. So that is a big part of our strategy in terms of this federal government as a model employer to assist managers in understanding their obligations, but also how EEO, diversity and inclusion, and these things benefit the managers in terms of their workforce productivity and greater service, whatever their service-related mission may be at their agency.
Yeah, and one of the great things I know Dexter's group is good at explaining is sometimes when an EEO complaint is filed against a manager, it's a very personal thing. They tend to want to shut down or immediately get into a defensive or adversarial posture. But you know, particularly through ADR and mediation, they're able to really teach managers how this can actually be an opportunity. You know, an opportunity for you to reach an employee, for you to communicate, you know, for you to explain things, and you know, which can help the mission. Overall, one of the biggest differences in private sector and federal sector EEO is in the federal sector, the employee who's filing a complaint or suing you is usually still your employee. In the private sector, it's not that case. So there's a real need and desire to want to work and make that relationship work. We have to stop here for our second break. When we come back, we'll let Dexter tell us a little bit about what he's got in store for the training day. We'll wrap up our discussion about the national convention. And then you're going to want to stay tuned for FMA's 2015's legislative update from Craig Stanford, FMA's Government Affairs Director. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you a federal or U.S. Postal Service employee or annuitant or an active or retired member of the Uniformed Services? If so, you're eligible to apply for coverage under the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program. The program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Find out how at LTCFEDS.com. That's LTCFEDS.com.
If you're a federal manager, you deal with a lot of information. Here's a tip on breaking through the noise. Join the Federal Managers Association to have a voice on Capitol Hill. And to get filtered news and information specific to managing your workforce, join the 50,000 other federal managers who already subscribe and read the free weekly e-report, fedmanager.com. I'm Todd Wells, Executive Director of the Federal Managers Association, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and we're talking with the Federal Managers Association, and we've been talking about their upcoming national conference and training day. And Dora, I know you're still on the phone with us, but we're going to go ahead and let you go. I know you need to get back to work. I appreciate you spending some time with us this morning.
Thank you so much. Everyone have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thanks, Dora.
So Dexter, again, we got Dexter Brooks on the line. Dexter is a key presenter for FMA's National Training Day. Dexter is the Director of Federal Sector Programs at the EEOC's Office of Federal Operations. Dexter, why don't you give us a little preview of your course?
So yes, I'm preparing a session on EEO and effective leadership and how they're the same. They're hand in hand. And it came about because we had a conference event last year, and FMA joined us, and they helped sponsor our event. And Todd and President Patricia Niehaus, they took the time out of their busy schedules to come over to EEOC to talk about ways we can partner, and we really appreciate that type of effort from FMA. And FMA has long been involved. We would shoot ideas off of FMA in the past when we were passing new directives like MD 715, which is Affirmative Employment Guidance. And so FMA reached out to us. I'll give them applause for actually making this effort and offered us an opportunity to present information to their stakeholders. And so my presentation, first of all, thanks federal managers for what they've done in terms of providing opportunity throughout the federal government. We've seen some very positive trends over the last 10 years, and those trends wouldn't have happened without federal managers. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the positive things that we've seen, then also to educate managers about the things in which EEO and diversity, how they can incorporate it into what they're doing as leaders that really benefit them. It's not just doing it because it feels good or the law requires it, but there are tangible outputs that they need as leaders that these types of activities and ingraining them into your day-to-day management style will really show some tangible benefits in terms of productivity, morale, and things of that nature. So my presentation is really structured around how EEO and effective leadership are the same and how they work to better provide service to citizens of this country, and that's going to be the focus of the presentation.
Dexter, how do you deal with the manager, like I sort of described before we went out on break, you know, who's taking this real personal?
Yeah.
You know, the whole process and, you know, and it's a, you know, cause in my day to day, I deal with this stuff, you know, every day and they take it real personal, and it is a personal thing to accuse somebody of discriminating, against them. You know, how do you deal with that sort of real visceral reaction that happens so often?
Right. And so in our trainings that we do and outreach that we do to management groups, we talk about just what you said, Tony, that it is personal, that when someone files an EEO complaint or initiates the EEO process, it's an allegation that a manager has engaged in illegal conduct and activities. And so it's hard not to take that personal. So we acknowledge that, and that when someone feels that it's not unusual and you're not acting inappropriately because that's your first instinct. And when I do presentations personally myself, I tell stories of the first time I was named in an EEO complaint or a grievance and how I became this manager who was like, this is crazy. This is outrageous. This process is just being used for inappropriate reasons. And I looked at myself and said, wow, I'm just like everyone else, because it can become that personal. And so what we really tell managers, that expect that it's going to feel raw and things of that nature, but be careful not to treat that person differently because they've initiated this process. That's their right. The process will play out, and if there were no actions that were discriminatory, and that will also come out, but that initial reaction and wanting to get back at a person creates a situation which we call retaliation or reprisal that's a violation of the law. And that reaction can, even though the initial action that the person is challenging is discriminatory, was done for non-discriminatory reasons and demonstrated, if the person overreacts to the filing of the complaint,
right,
then that could substantiate a claim by itself. So we say it's natural to have that emotional reaction to an allegation of discrimination. It's good to cope with it, and that's why training is so important. That's why it's so important what FMA is doing in terms of providing training for managers, so they understand when this happens to them and they feel emotional, that that's natural. But do not respond this way, because it could be detrimental to your organization.
Right, and I have also found, you know, that's so important to, you know, unfortunately the agencies don't do a very good job at this, in my opinion, at educating and explaining to managers what their role is in the process. You know, all of a sudden they get, you know, knocked on a door from an investigator, and, you know, and I've been accused, you know, somebody's filed against me. But you really sit down and explain, look, it's your role, you know, as far as the agency's perspective, is to respond to these questions, and you're establishing that legitimate non-discriminatory reason for doing whatever it is you did or did not do. And I just found it's very important for managers to understand their role in the process. It's also important, you know, for them to understand that it doesn't mean they stop managing that employee, right?
Right. That's correct.
Well, Dexter, we thank you for your time. Look forward to your presentation. I may even come over, sit in and audit the course. Is that all right?
That sounds fine. And thanks to Todd and Dora and Greg and the work they're doing at FMA. We appreciate it at EEOC.
Thank you,
Dexter. All right, buddy. You have a good weekend.
You too.
All right, Greg. Let's shift gears here and let's get into what FMA has got in store for their legislative initiatives for 2015. I know right out the gate there was some activity with the Wounded Warrior Federal Leave Act.
Yes, sir. We were very excited that that was reintroduced in the first couple weeks of the 114th Congress. There was a lot of action last Congress. We worked with both representatives and senators, and we were pleased with the movement we got in the 113th Congress. And then here in the first couple weeks of the 114th Congress, which was sworn in early January, legislation, it's an FMA initiative that was originally brought to us by FMA members in North Carolina at the Marine Corps Air Station Cherry Point. It's legislation that would provide advanced sick leave to disabled veterans newly hired to the federal government. It would be in their first year. They'd have 104 hours of advanced sick leave.
So they essentially start with leave in a bank. It's not like, I'm starting, I just got out of the military.
Correct.
And I'm starting with my half a leave, pay period sort of thing.
Exactly. Because they have these medically necessary appointments to keep their VA service disability rating and to treat these service-connected wounds and disabilities. And our members saw that a lot of these disabled veterans were burning through all of their annual leave, all of their sick leave. So this leave would be available during their first year. It wouldn't roll over to a second year. And they would need to use the leave for their service-connected disability. So if they had the flu or if their son or daughter had to go to a pediatrician visit, they would have to use regular sick leave or other leave like anyone else. And
that's an important distinction, because I think, people, somebody wants to say, well, what's different, I come out of college, I want to serve in a government the same way, why can't I shouldn't have the exact leave? Well, it's, it's being used for a specific purpose. It's a narrowly tailored, kind of exception,
Exactly. So we're very excited with the action that's taking place so far this year. As I said, it's been introduced in both the House and the Senate. Representative Stephen Lynch from Massachusetts and Blake Farenthold from Texas are the bipartisan co-sponsors in the House. That bill, the House bill, passed the Oversight and Government Reform Committee with unanimous consent last week. And we were grateful that Chairman Chaffetz, the new chairman of OGR, spoke highly of the legislation just earlier this week. He cited it as an illustration of a good government initiative, bipartisan, that would be a positive change for the federal workforce. And there's also legislation, as I said, in the Senate. We've been working with Senator John Tester from Montana and Jerry Moran from Kansas, so it's bipartisan there. And looking forward to getting both bills passed through and hopefully get signed into law in the near future.
It's one of these things that just make perfect common sense. They're not always, when I want to be sarcastic, I would say, look, in the private sector, I would just do it. We wouldn't have a meeting about it, But of course, we've got the legislative and bureaucratic process that's got to play itself out. And I would just say this, I'm a veteran myself. I didn't serve in, any war or anything like that, but I know veterans that have gone into the government. I mean, veterans aren't going to take leave if they think they're going to go in the hall. There's a psychological sort of stigma with that, they want to serve again. They want to be thankful for doing that. It's not the culture in the military. We didn't take sick days. Yes, you have your annual leave and things like that. So, it's a specific, benefit so that, they can take care of themselves, take care of their service connected, disabilities. So, that's wonderful.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things that we talk about our veterans of, supporting them. And when they come back, from the battlefields, everybody has nothing but great things to say about our armed services. And we talk about, we need to give our veterans the credit they're due. And we think this is one way of, you know, putting action to those words and really supporting members. We were very heartened. John Micah, a congressman from Florida, during the markup back in September in the last Congress, he described the bill, I'm paraphrasing, but he said it was a small bill that would have a huge impact. And we were very grateful for that. We're ecstatic that it's bipartisan. And like you said, it's just one of those common sense things that give back to those who already gave so much for the country and who want to continue serving in the public sector.
We're going to stop here. We're going to take our third break. When we return, we'll wrap up today's discussion with Greg Stanford and Todd Wells from FMA. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit LTCFEDS.com today. That's LTCFEDS.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering our last segment of the show, and we've been speaking with Greg from FMA about FMA's 2015 legislative initiatives. So speaking of legislative stuff, the president has just proposed a budget. Depending upon which side of the aisle you're on, you know, it's controversial or not controversial. Why don't you tell us what it means for federal employees?
Sure. You know, we've the federal employees have had a very, very tough time over the last several years. You know, as you spoke earlier with Dora about some of FMA's legislative successes, talking about reforms to Hatch Act and FERS sick leave. And one of the things that somewhat goes unnoticed are the things that didn't happen or that got wrapped up, you know, ending the pay freeze or preventing increases to pension contributions for current federal employees. And so when we take a look at the president's budget, which we were grateful that, you know, was released on time this year, and hopefully that's a signal that the entire appropriations process will go back on track.
Yeah, I didn't think
year.
About that. You're right. It was on time. In previous years, I had conferences that I was involved in, and we were always, you know, mired by what was going on there. But that's good news, actually.
Absolutely. And so there were a number of things in the president's budget request this year that, you know, I think our national president, Patricia Niehaus, said it best of, there is still a long ways to go to repair the damage that's been done to the federal workforce and to federal employees, but that the president's budget request is a good first step. One of the things that he called for is a 1.3% pay raise for all federal employees. We certainly support that. We support legislation that Jerry Connolly and Brian Schatz have introduced in both the House and the Senate that calls for a 3.8% pay raise for federal employees. As I said, the feds have dealt with pay freeze and then the minimal 1% pay raises, but we are grateful that the president included a call for a 1.3% pay raise for feds. And again, to go back to Chairman Chaffetz, he was speaking in remarks earlier this week. While not speaking specifically to the 1.3% proposal in the president's budget, he did signal support for a pay increase for feds, and so we're grateful for that and want to continue working with the chairman on that as well. The president's budget pays for an end to sequestration, and I think there's, you know, if there's something that we all agree on, at least everybody says they're against sequestration and, you know, how the poor policy and the blind cuts. I was watching Dr. Ash Carter at his confirmation hearing earlier this week talking about the impacts on the military. And, you know, federal managers completely agree with that. And so we're grateful that there's a proposal out there to end sequestration and get that awful policy off the books. It's still
all it was is just this easy to administer rule, which when you have easy to administer rules, you know, what's the downside is they ignore all kinds of relevant factors,
exactly.
When you just do something and they experience that, and everybody said they were going to experience that, you know, when they did that. I wonder if I can get you to comment on something you sort of, touched upon, when you started talking about the budget. You know, the last 2 years have been tough on federal employees, right? It's like it's been a human punching bag,
sure.
Up there. This is coming at us. What are we going to do? Let's drag this out and punch this whole thing again. I mean, do you see a change in that within this budget or?
Within the budget, absolutely. You know, and on the Hill, I think that I've seen a change in tone. You don't see the vitriol. It's not as overt anymore. And I think that, that's kind of been ever since the end of the shutdown in October 2013. We've seen people are starting to hopefully see the light of the positive work that the federal workforce does for all Americans on a daily basis. But you mentioned that of what when you tie it to the president's budget request, we are grateful for what the president has not included in the request, and a couple of provisions that he has included in previous years, one of them being he did not include increases to pension contributions. As you know, new hires are paying quite a bit more percentage-wise of their salary for no greater benefit, and we've been successful in preventing those increases from applying to current feds, but we're concerned that is still on the table. There are members of Congress who are supportive of making increases for current feds. So we're grateful the president did not include that in his budget request. And then chain CPI, that's an issue that doesn't affect just feds. That would affect anybody who receives Social Security benefits. A switch to chain CPI. Basically, proponents talk about chain CPI as a more nuanced calculation for calculating a cost of living adjustments to Social Security benefits, and we like it as it is. And the proponents talk about that the savings would be huge. The savings would be $162 billion over 10 years is the last figure I saw. But then on the other hand, they say that those cuts would be minimal or modest. Federal retirees, the average federal retiree would lose $48,000 over 25 years. And our former National Secretary, Dick Pedisano, calculated that it would cost him $50,000 over 25 years. And that's modest.
Let me just play devil's advocate and ask a tough question. You're not in favor of moving to the change CPI. You're in favor of keeping the current way it's being done. But is that because it's accurate? Is there data that says the way we're doing it is accurate and the change CPI is not accurate, or the application of it is going to apply disproportionately to some particular group or another? Are you simply against it because it's going to be less money for federal employees down the road?
Well, no. And again, it doesn't apply to just federal employees. It's anybody who receives Social Security benefits. I think both calculations are accurate. I think, proponents of chain CPI say that it's more nuanced and it's more correct, but the current CPI system they use, I think it's a CPIW, is accurate as well. The chain CPI, the idea that they use to illustrate it is that if the cost of beef it goes up, that consumers will change their purchasing habits and go buy chicken instead. And that's well and good. But when there are, you know, when you look at retirees who are purchasing medicines, prescriptions, right. you know, you can't really substitute purchases that way. So,
but I just wonder maybe if it adds more variables, it's more open to manipulation and things like that. You know, that we can they can crunch the code and stuff. So let's move on to some other in the few minutes that we have left. I'd like to move on to some of the other initiatives I know is important to FMA, such as the mandatory training for managers and supervisors.
Absolutely, and I think you know Dexter really hit on it very well earlier in the show about the importance of training, and you know really appreciated the words that he put to it, and so we can't wait for his presentation, his full presentation at the convention next month. You know, Dexter touched on the fact that oftentimes employees are promoted based on their technical merit and might not have those people skills just naturally, and so training is so important, and the investment in training will save dividends down the road by learning. What's, you know, what can managers do based on the collective bargaining agreement, at, you know, at their agency, and knowing how to deal with trouble employees and other savings that will save, you know, countless dollars down the road. So advocating for training, for funding for training is a big thing that we do at FMA and work with our partners at the Government Managers Coalition on that. Another issue that our members...
Let me say something about the training real quick. Sure. Just like federal, like, you know, the last 2 years have been hard on federal employees. The last 2-3 years have been hard on training.
Absolutely.
You know, in the wake of scandals, the GSA Vegas scandal, the VA, you know, abuses, what we're spending on these trainings, award ceremonies. So the classic thing we do in the government, overreact to it, and you know, they shut down, you know, all kinds of trainings. OMB put out a, you know, a circular about it, and all of a sudden nobody, you know, nobody can have trainings, nobody's going to the conferences, and it's like, wait a minute. Training is still mission essential, okay?
And a lot of times, you know, it's still mandatory, so-called mandatory.
It's still mandatory, still very important. So, you know, my advice to people who are trying to do that, I mean, whatever kind of training you're having, you know, you tie it to the mission. You know, like you guys got a great training day, and you tie it to substantive stuff. You know, you don't have clowns show up. You don't have somebody show up and tell jokes and juggling and different things.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more, Tony.
And what was the other, I interrupted you, the last legislative initiative you wanted to talk about it?
Well, I was going to say another issue that's important to managers is regarding the probationary period. You know, we've advocated an extension from 1 year to 2 years. Previously, there was legislation in the 112th Congress that would have done that. We're looking at other possible extensions of tying the probationary period to the end of training. Right now you have managers who are often making an up and down decision on an employee, and that's
such an important period. Is I call it the proactive hiring period. They come out of training, now you only have them for 6 months, you got to make a tough decision. It's actually, I think, fair for both sides, you know, to really get a full, you know,
and some
you
of
know,
them may just be coming out of training,
yeah, and you want to have a
if they are in there,
because managers, you're doing your job, that is the time to really evaluate the employee.
Exactly. You know, exactly. So. And so it's not fair for managers to make an up and down decision without, you know, seeing the employee do the job. And then it's not really fair for the employee themselves either.
I hear you. But that's all the time we have for the show today. Thank you for joining us. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend, everybody.